I'm going to ask your friend and mentor, Dr. Crawford Loritz, and Steve Robinson to join me up here on the platform this morning. I introduced both of these men last night as members of the Board of Directors for Family Life. And Crawford has been connected to Family Life since, I think, 1982?
Something like that.
Yeah. Crawford joined our speaker team back in the early 80s, and he and Karen have spoken at Weekend to Remember Getaways for decades with us. And Steve has been connected to Family Life since Dennis came and spoke to Chick-fil-A staff, and that was before I came to Family Life, so in the mid-80s. So these guys go way back with Family Life. I have to tell you that Steve wrote a book this year. One of our favorite interviews on Family Life Today that we aired in the summer was an interview that we did with Steve. Do we have a picture of his book? The book is called Covert... No, the other one. That's a great book, too. You're Married Today and Tomorrow by Crawford. But this is the one that Steve wrote, Covert Cows and Chick-fil-A. And if... The thing I loved about the book is, first of all, if you love Chick-fil-A, you love knowing where everything came from, the whole story of the birth of the chicken sandwich all the way down to the new product development. But it is a book on leadership and leadership principles, because Steve got a chance to see that modeled by Truett Cathy, who was a great leader. And it's a great book on the importance of culture in a business and in a ministry. I mean, I read the book, and as a pastor of a local church, I'm thinking, if churches would act more like Chick-fil-A, there'd be more people coming to churches.
Absolutely.
I mean, if we were greeting people in our churches the way Chick-fil-A employees have been taught to greet people who come into their restaurant, more people would be coming to church. And that's a part of culture, which is a part of what Steve was building into. You understood that at a kind of at a visceral level, that it goes, the chicken sandwich has got to be good, but it's not the chicken sandwich that is the primary thing, is it?
That's right.
Well, anybody can duplicate a product. It's hard to duplicate heart connections.
Yeah. In fact, one of the first times we met, I'll never forget you saying, We were talking about Chick-fil-A, and of course everybody loves Chick-fil-A, how good it is. He says, it's not that hard to make a chicken sandwich. And he said, it surprises me that there aren't people who haven't just figured out what we're doing and they're duplicating it. But it's not the chicken sandwich.
In fact, Truett used to say it was so simple, that's the reason he was able to do it.
Well, we're going to give you all a copy of Steve's book this morning, okay, before you're done. So you get a chance to read that, and I would just commend it to you. It's a fun book to read. It's one of those books that I don't read every book of people we interview because I just don't have that much margin in my life. But I started reading Steve's book, and I couldn't.
Again.
I don't have that much. Oh, no. I don't read every book. So your book on marriage, I didn't read that one, all right? I read his. Okay. Let me start off just by asking about why you both have a lot of opportunities, have had a lot of opportunities in life to decide where you're gonna donate time, where you're gonna invest your lives, and for whatever reason you said about Family Life, this is a place to invest for us. Why did you decide that? Did you know what you were deciding when you decided it back in the 80s?
You know, in hindsight, I think I intuitively knew, but I couldn't articulate it necessarily back in the 80s. Part of the reason is profoundly personal with me, and that goes back to my family and a profound sense of gratitude for my father and my mother and what they modeled before me, the stories that go all the way back to Peter the slave who turned things around because of his commitment to Jesus and strong families and all of that. And so that happened. So I think intuitively and on a personal level, I was drawn to Family Life because it represented what was meaningful in my own heart and life. But then later on, as I thought about it, you know, all roads lead back to somebody's family. And family is meant to be missional. and we are shaping the future. And God created family to steward his image from one generation to the next. And so I think ultimately all of us have to be involved in family ministry one way or the other. So,
As you're sharing that, when I came in 1992 and first met with Dennis to talk about coming to family life, he asked me the question, does marriage and family make you weep and pound the table? And I looked at him and I said, what makes me weep and pound the table is theology. I just study knowing God is what makes me weep and pound the table. I said, to the extent that marriage and family is on the heart of God, yeah, but it's bigger than that. What I didn't recognize in 1992 was the extent to which marriage and family is on the heart of God. I saw it in a few chapters and a few books in the Bible and thought, okay, this is there. He says stuff about that. But it is so fundamental and so foundational to human flourishing and to God's design. And I didn't know that in 1992.
But I think he's saying something very profound, and I'm not saying it's because we're up here and we're cheerleaders for family life, which we are. But if you have correct theology, you will love the church and the family.
Yes, yeah. You want to talk about your connection? Because again, you've had a lot of opportunities to be a lot connected in a lot of places.
I would say, Bob, first of all, it was very personal for me and Diane, by the way. My wife is here.
Yes.
My best friend for 47 years. It was very personal because she and I both had stable homes, but quite frankly, my home was, it wasn't rich in theology or in doctrine and gospel teaching. And I love my parents, but it didn't take long as a husband and a young father to figure out there's a lot I don't know. Mm-hmm. And my first introduction to family life was a weekend to remember. First Dennis at a Chick-fil-A seminar, and then a weekend to remember in D.C. And this guy was one of the speakers, and we met he and Karen there. I think not Karen, just you.
Yes.
And I saw family life as a source beyond the church for truth, and with application specifically to being a father and a husband. And I just want to affirm what Crawford said. In fact, we talked about this in the board meeting this week. There's only two institutions God created on earth, husband and wife / marriage and the church. Hmm. And there is no church. There's no need for the church if it was not for the fact that he created husband and wife.
Hmm.
And so every family is this cornerstone of not only society, but they ought to be the cornerstone of the church. That's the way he designed it to be.
You know, as Charlie was talking this morning about how the absence of love reflects an absence of a connectedness to God, if you look at the health of a culture and it's not doing well, it's pretty easy to go, how are their families doing? And you won't find a family or a culture full of healthy families that is a dysfunctional culture. But if you find a dysfunctional culture, you will find dysfunctional families, won't you?
Absolutely. You know, and I'm doing cartwheels. Love Charlie's message. And as a preacher, I can't wait to go back home and preach when you hear great preaching. I'm just...
You're going to do First John this Sunday,
hey,
aren't you?
Well, whatever, man. He did some research for me there. But... But I actually think, you know, it is the love dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
Families express the love of God. Incarnationally, the church represents incarnationally the love of God. And the starving of that love in our culture, the visceral hatred and the divisiveness that we see is not an invitation for us to join into that nonsense. It's really an x-ray that reveals the neediness of the culture for what we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think all of this mantling of society, the dysfunctions that are out there, is really a recommissioning of boldness to model the love of the Lord Jesus, the hope of Calvary, what the destination should be like before a watching world. And I think David is right on. He has said this any number of times in our board meetings and what have you, that I really believe this, that evangelistically, within these next couple of years, I think healthy families will be the greatest evangelistic tool in our society. I believe that.
Yeah. Both of you have served on the Family Life Board since its inception. and that's more than a decade ago, when the board was founded, I don't know, and you were asked to serve, I don't know that you thought, we will one day have to help navigate the transition of family life from founder leader to the next generation. And I don't know if you counted the costs that would be involved, because that's not an easy thing to navigate or transition. But that's what you've been through in the last, really it's been about a 5-year process from we need to get there to we are there. So Steve, talk about how the board has navigated this transition, because transitions like this, as David pointed out last night, more often do not succeed and do not go well than they do go well.
That's right, that's right. Well, first of all, credit has to go to Dennis, because at least 5 or 6 years ago, more than that really, when he appointed the board, he was very clear at the outset of having a fiduciary board, which eventually became a subsidiary of CRU, that he wanted a board to which he would be accountable. But he also made it clear he wanted a board who would be thinking about the future, and that included when he and Barbara would step aside. So he said that from the very beginning. And so it all really began because he was wise enough and gracious enough to know that that's ought to be part of the responsibility of the board, and in fairness and with a smile on my face, I think he was looking for somebody else to own the responsibility and not him.
Yeah.
We first challenged him, find your own successor. And for whatever reasons, that just didn't happen. So roughly 5 years ago, we were saying, oh, he said, I'd kind of like to transition out about the time I'm 70. We said, okay, let's get on with this and start thinking about the process and how we're going to do search, da 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 da. And so the board developed the search process. We used outside counsel to coach us on a good search process. We had sub-portions of the board that kind of led the process, and then all the board members interviewed all the candidates, and we had 6 or 7 serious candidates. And David and Meg were the only ones from within the CRU family. And trust me, God brought us some incredibly stellar candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just tell you a side story that really captures the essence of this. The first time Crawford and I met him, he and Meg came down to Florida where we were spending a little free time together. We spent some time with him. We go to dinner. David and Meg crawl in the back seat of Diane's big Sequoia, and Diane turns around to introduce herself, and he speaks to her, and she turns back around and just kind of blurts out, well, you're another Dennis Rainey. I mean, his transparency, his enthusiasm, his genuine spirit, and we'd already discovered his humility, really resonated. And I trust my wife's spirit of discernment. Mm-hmm. She nailed it early. Mm-hmm. And then after we determined he was the lead candidate that God had brought to us, we utilized some outside help, a young man I know from Pat Linson Enemy Group, who helped Dennis and Barbara develop a transition process and coached them through that. And at the same time, he did the same thing for Meg and David, transitioning them in. And then he stayed several months after David came and helped coach David and his leadership team through the process of getting reacclimated to each other. Mm-hmm. So it was, I have to give the entire board credit. They were all involved in it. I have to give Steve Sellers and CRU incredible credit. They supported us. They had loose hands with where David might be called, and they helped financially with some of this outside counsel we used. So it was a rewarding process, and I can just tell you, even as recently as last night, as I listened to them share, we are blessed with two leaders who are transparent. They're humble, they're smart, they're strategic, they love God, they have a passion for marriage and family, and I think they see the urgency and the opportunity of reaching more families for Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, and I think another part of this whole process, and as Steve is sharing, there is profound, great intentionality on the board and waiting on the Lord in this whole process. we could find leaders. There are a lot of leaders out there who, if you just want a leader that would just shepherd the, you know, outcomes and this kind of thing, you can find a lot of leaders out there. That was not the question. You find a lot of leaders that care about the family out there. That wasn't the issue. The issue was, yes, great competence and leadership and this kind of thing, but the issue was primarily calling. Who has God laid his hand on for this assignment for the foreseeable future? And I'll never forget, as we went out to dinner that evening, I knew of Dave and Meg because of having been around crew for a while, but I didn't really know them that well, and I'm thinking, hey, kind of young, and I don't know, and you know, they hadn't been necessarily in this space officially, but right after dinner, as we were talking at dinner, I'm going, whoa, there's something here, yeah. And we all sensed that, and so that was really the driver behind it, the issue of calling.
You've seen enough churches handle this poorly. As you look back on the transition that Family Life's been through, anything you'd add to what Steve shared about how God navigated this and why it has worked?
Well, I think sometimes churches and organizations handle this poorly because impatience drives them to get ahead of what needs to take place. You have to have the courage to wait for affirmation before you move. And I think that a lot of churches a lot of churches get in trouble with that. They get panicky and all of this stuff, and they end up getting somebody that, you know, yeah, they can check all the boxes and do this, and before you know it, you got nuclear waste on your hands. And so we didn't want to go down that road here. And so the wisdom of the board, the prayer and fasting and the seeking of God and waiting on him and affirming each step along the way. And I think the other piece, Dennis and Barbara's integrity and godliness and support, enormous. Because a lot of founders unwittingly inject embalming fluid in the future because they can't let go, or they won't let go, or whatever. But there, I think that was one of the key things that made the transition and made this still acceptable. And you guys on the executive team as well, all of that stuff. So there was affirmation and confirmation along the way, and we just thank the Lord for that. Yeah.
I would add one personal note, Bob, to what Crawford said. I had the benefit of being part of Chick-fil-A, and literally from the very beginning of my career, I learned from Truett Cathy, and I talk about it in the book quite a bit. I had my last interview with him, and I've been interviewing with him for over 5.5 months, stealth. I asked him if I was the right guy for the job, and his answer was, what are you looking for in the ideal candidate? And he says, well, I have absolutely no idea. All I know is I don't want to do it. But then he said this to me. He says, I know that if you come here, I want to know that we can trust each other and we have fun together, because the most important decisions we make here is who we invite into the organization. So I had this cultural vested in me of the most important decisions any organization makes is who you invite into it.
Right.
Now, we're dealing with one of the organizations that God has ordained and called. The board took it weighty.
So talk about the decision that the board has faced post. You bring on Dave and Meg, and then the next thing is, should we be looking at a relocation?
You want me to take a shot at that first?
Sure.
Okay. Well, I mean, here, and we've heard it. We've already heard it last night. We've heard it today. We've heard it in Charlie's words. The need is great. I might even say the crisis is great. And implicit in that, the opportunity is great. The greatest agent of change in our culture is going to be through the family and marriage. And so I won't unpack I'll just unpack where we ended up, where the board with David's leadership and the leadership team's input ended up. We decided we're at a point in the ministry where we need more strategic partnerships, one of them being the ministries of crew.
Right.
But top of the list, crew, churches, other ministries. We need more strategic partnerships around the country. It's hard, quite frankly, it's hard to build those out of Little Rock. Number two, we need a talent base that is more diverse, not only ethnically, but skill set and age and just cultural perspectives. We need a more diverse skill talent pool. And third, we need infrastructure that's efficient and effective, and we're not spending a fortune on it. And here we have an opportunity to partner with Crew and kind of plug in to a lot of their back-of-the-house infrastructure, where Family Life can really focus on the unique things that they can do, while accounting and IT and HR and other stuff is available to them. And then kind of the kicker is the opportunity to be part of a city that helps do the first two. Strategic gateway, talent pool, and we did, you know, your team, David's team, did an extensive research on alternative sites, including Little Rock. Three or four cities rose to the top, but the relationship with Crew, physically as well as that infrastructure ability, was the kicker,
yeah.
And that's why we chose to go.
Yeah, and you know, all I have to say too is that you know, in the history of organizations, I mean, there has to be change. And I don't mean that you just randomly change, but Little Rock was wonderful in terms of the development of Family Life, and it's been great, foundational, absolutely. But we stepped back and said the question was, what's the best stewardship of the mission? What is the best stewardship of the mission? How can the ministry be positioned for the next 20 years or 25 years, and how can we leverage those opportunities? I mean, could we continue to do it in Little Rock? Yeah, we could continue to do it there, but the issue was not what we could do. What is the best place for that to be? And so I think that was behind that decision. It wasn't just a random choice. And obviously, we counted the cost. We also know, and my goodness, we've been around Family Life, and I'm almost like an adjunct member of the staff there. And so realizing that, hey, you're asking people to move, they're settled in there, they've got kids there, families there, it's comfortable there, and all of that, and we've moved during our lives, and we understand what all that's about. And so we weighed that and counted the costs with regard to that. But at the end of the day, we're called to the best context to serve the mission in the most effective way that will accelerate what needs to be done, and that tipped the scales.
And this is a little subjective, but I would say, to add to that, how can we do that exponentially, not just incrementally? And so all that weighs into the issues that led us to make a move. And it couldn't have happened without David's sensitivity to the staff, but his willingness and his leadership team's willingness, the mission is the driver.
Yeah.
It ain't about us.
Yeah.
It's about the mission.
Right. Yeah.
And the opportunity of the mission.
So one final question, then we're going to take a break. I'll ask both of you just to comment on the next 5 years for Family Life. Obviously, the move is going to be one of those things that's going to consume a lot of calories over the next 2 years. But missionally, as you think about where Family Life's going to be 5 years from now and the things we're going to, by God's grace, be celebrating 5 years from now, what are you looking forward to? What do you see on the horizon that you go, that's what I'm excited about?
Oh, I tell you, I wish you all could have been in our board meeting the last couple of days. It was just, I say this, I serve on a number of boards. The last two board meetings that we have had have been some of the best board meetings, period, I've ever been a part of because of that question. And I think what we're excited about over the next 5 years and is sort of like the acceleration of movement through family life, and the radical focus on really discipleship, giving ministry away, pouring into people, them owning it and multiplying it throughout the country and cities. And so I think, and I know that David and the others, you'll hear more about this, unpacking this, but we're excited about, and in a strange way, although we weren't smart enough to think about it, I think even the move kind of accelerates that thinking too, because we're thinking, okay, the refreshment of our calling, what have we been called to? We're called to a movement, not to an organization or an institution. We're called to pay that price. And so I'm excited over the next 5 years. I just actually think that there's going to be more energy, more multiplication taking place of the ministry, more focus. And so that's what I'm excited about.
Steve?
Ditto all that. And at the heart of this, Bob, is I think it's, and this is part of what I meant by exponential growth versus incremental growth. How do you mobilize an army of marriages and families to serve the people they care about, the people they know? And it's not staff-centric. We can never recruit enough staff for that.
Right.
We're talking about a national and even an international strategy of commissioning, equipping and commissioning families across this country to have their own ministry mm-hmm. with families and marriages.
Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people like
tens
this.
Tens of thousands. I mean, Christ sent out 11. Yeah. One guy blew it.
Right.
But Christ sent out 11. And what happened? Changed the world.
Yeah.
We got more than 11 right here.
Yeah.
That's right.
And so how can we send out literally hundreds of thousands of equipped and passionate couples in their neighborhoods, in their churches? And by the way, we talked about this week. This is not a, I dislike this term parachurch. It's not biblical. We are part of the church. We are simply helping to equip and mobilize a part of the church to both serve the church, but also serve those who aren't in it yet.
When I first came to Family Life, one of the first videos I saw had Steve and Diane Robinson in it, talking about leading a home builders group in their home and ministering to couples in their community through home builders.
I had black hair then.
You did have black hair then.
I had hair then.
Crawford had hair then. Yeah. But you've had that experience of being a part of the kinds of people you want to see mobilized and deployed, and that's what you're talking about. We'll talk about that more throughout the course of this weekend. Thank you both for your service to this ministry, for your leadership, for how you've helped navigate and guide all of this, and thanks for taking time to unpack this with us.
Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Bob.
Yeah,
thank you.